About 8 or 9 years ago, there was a new cafeteria that opened here in Dallas. And I like to eat in cafeterias because I can choose exactly what I want and I can see what I'm about to eat. So I was excited about this one because it was a new chain of cafeterias and give us a new source of eating. Well, the redhead and I rode past it. Now, my wife, incidentally, I refer to her as the redhead. She's a decided redhead, meaning simply that one day she just decided she is going to be a redhead. And when I talk about her, I call her the redhead. When I'm talking to her, sugar baby. And her name is Jean. Well, the redhead and I were riding down, and every time we would pass the cafeteria, the line was sticking out the door. Finally, the beautiful day came. No line out the door. We go walking in. When we walked in, we could understand why the line was not out the door, because they had snaked it all over the place. We were already parked, so we decided to stay. She and I visited as we walked down the line, had about 30 people in it. We got to the end of that line and turned around, and there was another line of about 30 people. So we were walking and talking as we walked down. Turned around, there's another line of about 30 people. But this time I could see what was going to be available. I could see between the people being served. And I made mental notes as I walked down the line, said, I believe I'll have me some of that. Yeah, and that looks good. Boy, I want me some of that. Boy, and I like the looks of that. I'll take me some of that. Now, it's important that you make these decisions because I don't care how prodigious your appetite is. You cannot eat some of everything on a big cafeteria line. So I had to make those choices. Finally, I got my tray and my silver, and I came down the line, and my choice has already been made, so I wasted no time. I said, I'll take me some of that, and give me some of that, and I want some of that, and I'll have some of that. Got to the end of the line, I reached in my pocket and pulled out my money. The lady held up her hand, and she said, no, you don't pay for it until you get ready to go. I said, you mean to tell me you're going to let me eat all of this food and not have to pay for it until I get ready to go? She said, yeah, that's just the way we do it. Well, I can't tell you the number of times I've thought about that. Because you see, in one sense of the word, that is exactly like life, the cafeteria line is. In life, we have an incredible assortment of choices of the places we can live, the things we can do, the foods we can eat, the occupations we can follow. An incredible number of choices. That's the way the cafeteria line is. Life is just like that. But on the other end of the scale, life is 180 degrees apart from the cafeteria line. In the cafeteria, you eat and then you pay. But in the game of life, you pay and then you eat. You go to school, you study your lessons, you pass the grade, they move you up to the next grade until you graduate from high school. Then if you go to college, then you study your lessons again, you get your degree. Then if you go on to graduate school, and finally after all of that is over, you get into your profession and you work a week, a month, or whatever, and then and only then, after you've done all of those things, qualified and then done the work, do you receive the pay. The farmer plows the ground, he plants the seed, he waters it, he fertilizes it, he nurses it along, he kills the insects, and finally the day comes when he can go to the fields and bring it in and take it to the marketplace, and then he cashes it in. That's the way it is. You first pay, and then you receive the benefits. As we look at this segment of personal growth, we're going to be talking about the fact that we've all got to have goals in life. Most of us, you see, are very much like this old boy down home. His wife sent him downtown to buy ham. He came home and she said, honey, you didn't cut the end of it off. He said, you didn't tell me to. She said, well, I thought you knew. We always cut the end of the ham off. And he said, why? She said, well, mother always cuts the end of the ham off. He said, well, mama's back in the kitchen. Let's go back there and ask her. So they went to the kitchen and said, mama, how come you cut the end of the ham off? She said, I always cut the end of the ham off because my mama cuts the end of the ham off. So the old boy said, well, let's solve this three-generation mystery right now. They got on the phone long distance. They called Grandma and they said, Grandma, how come you cut the end of the ham off? She said, I cut the end of the ham off because my roaster is too small. Now, Grandma had a reason for cutting the end of the ham off. But the question is, do you have a reason? The reality is that 97% of the people in our society do not have clearly defined, written down goals for their lives. Now, there are four basic reasons they don't have goals. And the first reason, actually, is because of fear. Spelled, of course, F-E-A-R. And this forms an acrostic for false evidence appearing real. So many millions of people have been conditioned to believe that there is no use in setting goals because over a period of time, nothing good is going to happen to them anyhow. They've been told a lot of times that you cannot do things, don't expect it. The input basically has been negative. Chad Helmstetter, in his book, What to Say When You Talk to Yourself, points out that the average 18-year-old has been told 148,000 times no or you can't do it. 77% of our self-talk is negative. Dr. J. Allen Peterson, in his book, The Myth of the Greener Grass, points out that one computer study revealed that over 90% of the daily input in our minds is of a negative nature. And so a lot of people, therefore, simply do not set those goals. They've accumulated some false evidence, but it appears real, and they act accordingly. Because if it appears real, as a practical matter, it has the same impact as if it were real. For example, I could go into any city, just about anywhere in the world, with nothing but my handkerchief that I have in my hand, and I could rob a bank with my handkerchief in my finger. All I'd have to do is put the handkerchief across my face, put my finger in my coat pocket, aim at the teller, and say, "Give me your money." The evidence would be false. It would appear real. And that individual would handle it as if there were a real gun in there. Now, I'd walk out with the money. I might get shot on the way out, but at least that teller would surrender that money. You might have seen this. A young Cuban hijacked a plane to Cuba using nothing but a bar of soap. He put the bar of soap in a box. He said to the captain of the aircraft, "This is a bomb. Let's go to Cuba." They went to Cuba. The evidence was false. It appeared real. The thing about life, the thing about nature is this. Oliver Wendell Holmes years ago said, "The great tragedy in America today is not the waste of our natural resources, though that is a great tragedy." He said, "The real tragedy is the waste of our human resources." And the average individual will go to their grave with their music still in them. You see, man and nature are 180 degrees apart. We use up nature's natural resources by using them up. We use up man's natural resources by not using them at all. Fear keeps a lot of people from setting goals. The second thing that keeps a lot of people from setting goals is because they have such a poor self-image. They cannot imagine in their wildest imagination them becoming college graduates, getting the superb job, living in the nice home, winning the ideal mate. They cannot imagine themselves being financially successful or secure. Their image simply will not let them get there. Now, understand again that we perform in accordance with the image or the picture we have planted in our own mind. Positive thinking will not work for the individual who is negative on himself. You got to have that positive image, that good self-image of yourself. One of the most amazing stories, which I believe really epitomizes what I want to say about this, is the story of Tom Hartman. On January the 28th, 1979, Tom Hartman attended a seminar up in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. It was an all-day seminar. Later, I got a letter from him. Since then, he and I have become friends. We've corresponded a number of times, visited a number of times. And the gist of the story is this. He attended that seminar that day because his brother had an extra ticket. That was Tom's day off. There were about 1,500 or 1,600 other people there. Tom sat in the very center of the audience. In his first letter to me, he said, "You know, Zig, as I sat there, I hadn't been there 3 minutes before I realized I was in the wrong place. You were in front of this audience saying some wild things, like you can go where you want to go, you can do what you want to do, you can be like you want to be." And I thought to myself, "Oh, brother, is that a bunch of baloney? I'd heard guys like you before." And to be honest, he said, it made me a little uncomfortable, and I looked around for a way for me to easily get out of there in case it got any worse, which is exactly what it did. It wasn't 3 more minutes when you actually had the gall to look at that audience, to all of us, and say, "God loves you, and He wants the best for you." And I knew that was a bunch of baloney, and I really looked around for a way to get out, but there I was, stuck right in the middle. 1,500 or 1,600 people, and there was no way I could get up without creating a disturbance. So he said, I looked at my watch, and I just decided I would get out of there at the first break, and that would be the end of that. A few minutes later, you even made some reference to the fact that we were going to be dead longer than we were going to be alive, and therefore we needed to be setting those really long-range goals. Was it long when you had the audacity to say to us that man was designed for accomplishment, he's engineered for success, he's endowed with the seeds of greatness? Now, when you said that, Zig, he said, I looked down and I thought to myself, well, it's at least partially right, because I was looking at a 6 to 3 1/2 inch waistline and 407 pounds of bulk. He said, I was coming off a devastating divorce. I had a job only because my employer was my friend, not because I was actually earning the money. Hadn't been to church in many years. I was so broke that every Friday night I was writing a hot check so I could get something to eat, and I would pick it up on Monday morning. This, as I said, was about 10 years ago. And he said, there you were saying all of those things. And I don't really know, Zig, what it was that you said, but somehow or other, something rang a bell in my mind. And I don't know whether it was because of the repetition or because somebody behind me said, that's right, or reinforced you in some way. But I reached over and I got my pen and I started to take notes on my yellow pad. Said, Zig, I took notes all day long. When I got through, for the first time in my adult lifetime, I saw just a glimmer of hope. I so desperately wanted to get your set of tapes on motivation, but I did not have a dime to my name. And my brother, bless his heart, he loaned me the money. I went home that day and I listened to those tapes that evening, 7 hours. I'd listened to you live 7 hours, now I listened to you 7 hours on tape. The next morning, I came in and the first thing I did was tell my boss that he no longer just had a friend on the payroll, that he now had an employee. Old Tom kind of grins, and he said, I even told him I was going to start carrying my own weight. Now, he said, Zig, you know, at 407 pounds, that represented a pretty substantial statement. He went over to Oklahoma City University that afternoon and enrolled in a couple of courses in psychology. He was already taking a couple of courses in history, and he decided to switch over so he could learn something about himself and something about his fellow man. The next day, he went down to the Nautilus Health Studio. He decided to do something about his miserable physical condition. Then on Thursday, he went down to one of the men's stores and laid aside about $700 worth of clothes with a minute down payment. When the owner of the store saw him buying size 47 coats and 39 slacks, he went to him and he said, Mr. Hartman, who are you buying the clothes for? Tom told me, he said, when I told him I was buying it for myself, he looked at me like he thought I was crazy. But I said to him, don't worry about it. I will wear these clothes out of here. Tom Hartman said, you know, Zig, somebody might resist you once or twice or a dozen times. But when you keep telling them that you are important, that you are somebody, that you do have ability, that you can do things with your life, he said, I just believe eventually that it will get through. He kind of grins and he says, isn't it amazing? A message can go around the world 24,000 miles in less than a tenth of a second. And then sometimes it takes years for it to go that last 1/8 of an inch. But he said, finally the message got through to me. I was listening every day. And as a matter of fact, Zig, he said, I've listened to your tape so much that if you ever get a sore throat, don't you dare cancel the engagement. You just call me, because he said, I can deliver it verbatim. He said, I've even got the same accent, if you can imagine him accusing me of having an accent. Well, he said, you know, Zig, I had been on the program about 6 weeks. Never forget it, I was in a store getting my food. And there's a little 4-year-old girl in there with her mother. And those of you who were ever 4 years old, or if you have 4-year-olds, you know there's one thing about a 4-year-old: when a thought pops in the mind, it pops out of the mouth uncensored. I mean, you get truth, pure truth, out of the mouth of a 4-year-old. Well, in a voice that you could hear halfway between Dallas and Fort Worth, this little 4-year-old screamed out, Mama, look at that fat man. And Tom said, I turned around. to see where he was. And he said, then it dawned on me she was talking about me. And he said, I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever heard in my life. He said, I laughed until I literally cried. And then he said, I shed a different kind of a tear. Because he said, for the first time in my adult lifetime, I really knew and knew that I knew that I was going to make it. He said, that was reinforced about a month later. I'd been to the movie. I was on the way back to my car. I was in no hurry. I had nowhere to go, nothing to do when I got there. And we've all done this as we amble down the street with no direction in mind, no hurry involved. He saw a display in a window. And though he was not really interested in the display, he ambled over and he started looking at it. And Tom said, you know, Zig, I don't know whether I was there for 1 minute or 10 minutes. But he said, all of a sudden, I became aware of the fact that I was not by myself. Some big dude was looking over my shoulder, and he said, I whirled around. And, of course, there was no one there, because Tom Hartman had been looking at his own image, which he no longer recognized. A good friend of mine before his tragic death, John Kozek from Dunedin, Florida, brilliant young psychiatrist, said that at that specific moment, Tom Hartman was no longer obese. Though he still weighed over 360 pounds, he was no longer obese because he no longer saw himself as an obese person. The basic problem with crash diets, according to Dr. Kozek, is that they will take the weight off your body. That's relatively easy. But then that individual lays down at night in the dream, and they dream as an overweight person. And the body goes to work to complete the picture the mind has given it. Tom Hartman no longer saw himself as an overweight person. Now, what's the end of the story? Well, of course, the story hasn't ended yet. But Tom Hartman graduated magna cum laude with his degree in psychology. He's working on his doctorate. Tom weighs a little over 200 pounds, which is about what he should weigh. He's about 6 feet 3 inches tall and has a very large frame. He teaches a Sunday school class every Sunday. He's in business for himself. And I give you the story in such great detail because I believe that when you analyze it, here is a man who was physically bankrupt, spiritually bankrupt, he was socially bankrupt. From a family perspective, he was bankrupt. He was bankrupt in every important area of life. And yet, because he became involved in the development of a good self-image, he got involved in setting those goals, and the results were absolutely spectacular. You got to have goals. The third reason that 97% of the people don't have goals is basically they have never really been sold. Now, that's my prime function in this particular segment, is to sell you on having your goals. And that is exactly what I'm going to do. By the time this recording is over, you will, in fact, be sold on the absolute necessity of having goals. I am so confident that you're going to be sold that I'm going to tell you that before you go to bed tonight, you will have started taking the important steps to setting your own goals. I'll even go further than that. If you don't write some of your goals down this very evening, you might as well not go to bed as far as sleep is concerned, because you are not going to be able to go to sleep. Let me say that again. If you don't write them down, you're not even going to be able to go to sleep. You absolutely must have goals. Now, I want to stress, goals work for individuals, they work for families, they work for companies, and they work for nations as well. The basic problem that we face is this. Most people, when they're busy working on the job, they get to thinking, you know, I really ought to be spending more time with my family. And then when they're spending time with their family, they get to thinking, you know, I really ought to be out there working for my family. And when they're out there working with their family or for their family, the mind is back home. And when they're back home, their mind is back out there in the field. Then they tell everybody, well, I don't ever have time for anything. No wonder you're always traveling. You see, the truth is, most people, when they're at work, their mind is at play. When they're at play, their mind is at work. So they're neither working nor playing wherever they are, but it's wasting time any way you look at it. And one of the beautiful things about having goals and directions is the fact that you will be able to work when you work and play when you play. I will not suggest that you work harder. As a matter of fact, by the time we get through, you will probably end up working less. But when you're on the job, you will be on the job. You will be working infinitely more effectively when you work in this manner. And you will have that balance of life. We say it so many times in so many different ways. There's a difference between standard of living and quality of life. And we're going to be looking at quality of life because that's the significant thing. 1953, Yale University did a study of their graduating seniors. They discovered that of those seniors, only 3% of them had taken all of the steps necessary to set their goals. That is, they had identified exactly what they wanted and written it down. They had spelled out why they wanted to reach these goals. They had listed the obstacles they had to overcome in order to get there. They had identified the people, the groups, and the organizations they needed to work with in order to get there. They had identified what they needed to know to reach that goal. They had developed a plan of action to reach that goal. And finally, they were able to put the date on it as to when they expected to get there. Only 3% of the graduating seniors had taken all of those steps. An additional 10% had taken 5 of those steps. But 87% of them, beyond identifying that they wanted to be a doctor or a professor or an attorney or whatever, really had not done that much towards goal setting. Now, please understand, everybody has goals. One of your goals, for example, if you're in your car listening to this recording, one of your goals was to listen to this recording. Everybody has goals. But we want to get a little more involved in that. We really want to get involved so that we know exactly what we're doing and why we're doing it, and we can get much better results. 1973, they did another study on those seniors who had graduated from Yale. And in the two areas which they could measure, that is their financial accomplishments and their career accomplishments, the 3% who had taken all of the 7 steps had accomplished more than the 97% who had not. Ladies and gentlemen, the evidence is absolutely overwhelming. You must have those goals. You cannot make it as a wandering generality. You must become a meaningful specific. A lot of people go to work tomorrow because that's what they did yesterday. And if that's the reason you're going to go tomorrow, you won't be as good as you were yesterday because now you're 2 days older. And you're no closer to the goal, which you do not have. A lot of people complain about lack of time. It is not lack of time in 99% of the cases. It is lack of direction. Direction literally creates time, and motivation creates energy. Let me see the hands of those in here who have ever had one of those days. Can I see your hands? You know what I'm talking about, don't you? All right. You get up early in the morning. You've got that critically important appointment at 8:30. You get up 2 hours early. You want to make absolutely certain you get there on time. You walk out the front door. You're all spiffed up and spanked up. I mean, you're really raring and ready to go. You got a full hour to get there. But as you walk out, you notice that you've got a flat tire. That's the best thing that happens to you all day long. I mean, that is just the beginning point of it right there. You hustle and bustle and sweat, and you get the tire changed, and you got to change your clothes, you clean up, and you rush down to the appointment. You get there on exactly the specified time, and you see a little note on the door. Sorry, I was called out of town. Have thought the matter over. Have decided I'm not interested. Don't you call me. I will call you. You go down to the office and you're greeted with a ringing telephone as you walk in. It is your administrative assistant, and she cannot make it for that day. You notice that it appears to be unusually hot, and that's because the air conditioner has cut off. A couple of hours later, the plumbing breaks down, and one thing after another all day long until finally, mercifully, the day ends. And you're not whipped, you are whooped. I mean, you have had it. You wearily get your coat, you struggle out to the car, and you drive home with scarcely enough energy to walk in the front door. Your wife, of course, lovingly greets you there at the front door, and she said, "Honey, I'm so glad that you didn't have to work late, because today is the day. Today is the day for what?" "Oh, honey, don't tell me you've forgotten it. You know, we planned on this for the last 3 weeks." "We planned on what?" "Today is the day, honey. Don't you remember today is the day we clean the garage?" "Oh, honey, not today. I couldn't put one foot in front of another, honey. I just don't have any." "Oh, honey, it's not going to take that long. I'm going to help you. It won't take more than 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. Absolute maximum." "Oh, honey, I just can't not today. I just ain't up to it. I don't have any energy." And the telephone rings. Voice out there and says, "Hey, partner, I've got us a tea time over at the country club. In 17 minutes. We've got time to get in 9 if you feel like playing." "If I feel like playing, man, I'll be there in 10 minutes. And everybody here agrees with exactly what I'm saying, don't you? The answer's yes, isn't it? Okay. I want to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. We've got plenty of energy to do the things we really want to do. But as I often say, life is not easy. Life is tough. But when you're tough on yourself, life is going to be infinitely easier on you. And I'm going to tell you that when you do the things you ought to do, when you ought to do them, the day will come when you can do the things you want to do, when you want to do them. A lot of people say, "Well, I just don't feel motivated to do something." Well, you got it backwards. You do the something, and then you will feel motivated to do it. Motivation literally follows the action. Motivation creates energy.